Many of you were not here last Tuesday, but for those of you who were, I just want to give once again my heartfelt thanks for maybe one of the most joyous times I've ever had in my life, and kind of a once-in-a-lifetime little love fest. And the really gratifying thing to me was that it didn't feel as though it was just about me. It was really about our community, and it was about just sharing in love. And I know there were people who spoke last week, but whoever was in the chairs, not so many spoke. So I thought I would just leave it open a few minutes for anybody that wanted to say anything about their experience last week. I had a few little things that came up for me, and I'd be happy to share that. But if anybody has any comments, otherwise I'll just launch right into my best joke. Well, for those of you who weren't here, and those of you who know this to be true who were here, as I had holding my hand essentially my mother, my 87-year-old mother. I had my wife, partner, and my 10-year-old daughter. And I saw my mother sitting on the chair with her little black purse, and which broke my heart in the sweetest kind of way. But then I thought about this story about this woman, probably similar in age to my mother, who wanted desperately to meet the guru. And it was quite an arduous thing to be able to travel to see this guru. She had to go to faraway lands, and she had to travel with great hardship over hill and over dale and all kinds of forms of transportation. And then when she finally made it to the cave in the mountain where the guru was, she was told when she entered the cave that she could say only three words to the guru. And she went into the cave and she paid her respects, and then invited to say her three words, she looked at the guru and said, "Sheldon, come home." So I felt a little bit like Sheldon last week with my mother sitting here. And then the second thing, and this is a slightly embarrassing to say, but I have very little censor at this time of my life, is that this week I flashed on the Academy Awards vintage somewhere in the 1990s when Sally Field got the Academy Award, and she said, "You really do like me," or "You really do love me." And she, of course, has been teased about that ever since, you know, people having her Sally Fields moment, "You really do love me." But I've never been busy, I've just been busy sharing the Dharma, you know, and in my mind, just loving you and loving the teachings and loving being able to share the good news and the potential that each of us has within us to awaken, and then to have it received with so much love, just blew my mind. Just blew my mind, because you never know. And so I'm just so appreciative, and I will carry whatever that circle of giving and receiving, that it just showed me what the power of generosity is in that deepest sense, that there is such a gift there's a gift to the giver and the gift to the receiver, and that circle just keeps going on and on, and that is the wheel of the Dharma. It is the wheel of generosity. It's the wheel of gratitude that just has kept the teachings alive for 2,600 years, mind to mind, heart to heart, and it was the heart was so palpable the whole room just was filled with luminosity and love. And so I know I had my part in it, but everybody had their part in it, and I was glad that it wasn't just me. So thanks again for all of that. And then I was thinking also about what is it that people connect with, or what is it about the Dharma that people connect with? The Dharma meaning the teachings, the truth, the way it is. Because every Tuesday, essentially, I say, listen, you have, as your natural state, as the closest thing to you, this precious jewel of awareness. It is primary to your nature. If I ask all of you right now, stop being aware. What becomes so clear is the only thing that is just unshakable, really, unconditioned, unborn, that just it's indestructible, is this capacity of being aware. And it seems when we say, what is awareness? What is it? It's not something that it's invisible, like empty space. It's clear, it's not made of anything, yet it's shining, reflecting everything. Everything is known. So it's somehow not seen, but it's implicit that it's everything. And that everything is known, everything is within this capacity of being aware. And yet it still seems empty, like the sky, this being aware. It doesn't have there's no height, there's no depth, there's no color, no shape, no beginning, no end, no inside, no outside. It's just aware, and everything is known. I'm known to you, you're known to me, and there's this sense when we're aware together, we inter are, you know, we, as Thich Nhat Hanh puts it, we are of one taste in this field of awareness. This kind of shared consciousness, you could say. And yet, it's invisible. But the interesting thing is that every week, what's actually offered as instruction is to take this natural state of awareness and give it attention by giving it a focus, so that you actually begin to recognize that you're aware. And what we use to help wake up the fact in us that we're aware is we rub that awareness against our body. We feel our bodies, and that freshens our awareness. We feel our breath. We feel the whole field of sensations. We let ourselves register sounds. We let everything be the cause of brightening, and in the long run, steadying our attention. And then if I've offered anything over the years, if anything has happened, it's that I have, there's a poem, I've given myself so much to this this quality of awareness, being aware. I just realized why I had wanted to read this poem from Hafez, where it's entitled, I've Learned So Much. I have learned so much from the divine that I can no longer call myself a Christian, a Hindu, a Muslim, a Buddhist, a Jew. The truth has shared so much of itself with me. I can no longer call myself a man, a woman, an angel, or even pure soul. Love has befriended Hafiz so completely that it has turned to ash and freed me of every concept and image my mind has ever known. Well, what little measure of that I realize is it could be reduced to the simple fact that if you mingle enough with awareness, which is like mingling with the divine, it's invisible yet contains everything, if you mingle with that, it brings with it. It brings with it affection. It brings with it all the what are called the immeasurable qualities. Somebody at the end, immeasurable qualities, and the what are considered the immeasurable qualities are loving kindness, our compassion, when that kindness meets pain, sympathetic or altruistic joy, when that kindness meets good fortune and delight, and wisdom, the quality of equanimity that understands that things are as they are and they are arising according to conditions. These are the immeasurable qualities. And somebody asked on the retreat that I was just leading, and some of you who are here just came off of retreat, somebody asked at the end, well, you know, you talked about the natural mind, but what about the four Brahmaviharas, these qualities of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity? And I said, these are implicit in a mind that is open. When you are aware what that does, what it does for anyone. And that's why this Sangha is able to love, is that we put our attention here, 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 here. We do it every week as much as we can. And I know that many of you do it all the time, as much as you're able to remember. When attention is applied to anything, it brings affection. It's not possible for me to look at you and be present with you and not start to love you. It's not possible for me to see your pain and not have my heart break. It's not possible, if I'm really present with you, to, if you tell me of something that is wonderful in your life, for me, it's not possible for me to avoid joining you in that delight and feeling that sense of altruistic joy. And it's not possible, if I meet you with steady awareness, that I will get caught in my reactions to praise and blame, to gain and loss, to fame and shame, to name it, to pleasure and pain. I will be able to meet you and meet whatever that is with much more balance. That is a function. It is a natural expression and a function of awareness. And this is why we do it, day in and day out, taking that natural awareness and focusing it so that it remains, so we remain in close proximity to that primordial fact within us. We do it, we need that kind of, we need these anchors. We need the body, we need the mind, we need the moods, we need everything to help continue to freshen and remind us of this ever-present refuge within us. So when we talk about, we always do on retreats, and sometimes here we talk about, I go to the Buddha for refuge. You know, we often think of the historical Buddha and this wonderful being like us, human, who woke up. But what we're really saying when we say, I go to the Buddha for refuge, it means, Buddha means awake. I go to wakefulness for refuge. And when we say, I go to the Dharma for refuge, it's not just the teachings, it's not just the laws of nature as we can reflect on them, it's what a Buddha knows in every moment is what's happening. And we let what's happening and we let awareness mingle together, and it reminds us again and again of this ever-present fact of being aware, and out of that comes love. And that's why we could have a gathering like we did last week, because practice leads to love. It leads to the sure heart's release. And even if in your presence of mind, because we're also conditioned to be unaware, to become obscured, even all the greed in our mind, when it meets awareness, it turns into letting go. It turns into generosity. It gets transformed by being aware of it. It's just the same as a moment when you realize you're holding your breath, and that comes into, and you become aware of it. That becomes the cause of breathing again, of letting go. The same as when you feel greed, when you notice your mind is in a state of greed, and you really notice it. You feel the tension of it, you see the story of it, you see the way you're hostage to the imagined future. There's something in us, an intelligence that flows from being aware, that says, let go. Let be. Don't wait for anything to be happy. Let this moment of greed be the reminder of your love of having enough right here. And when you see, when that awareness hits hatred, ill will, if we're actually able to feel that ill will, it transforms into loving kindness, but first it transforms into compassion. If we actually feel it, we start to feel how painful it is to be in a state of ill will. Instead of being so quick to project that ill will onto and blame the world, we instead feel what that's like to be in a state of anger. And when you feel that, you say, ouch. And that begins to open a process of compassion. And out of compassion, then what do? We find the antidote to ill will, which is loving kindness. And we work that. And then, of course, when we see delusion, I'm describing right now the way that mindfulness, when it hits what the Buddha called the three poisons, greed, hatred, and delusion, it becomes transformed. When greed, hatred, and delusion go unnoticed, they spread out into the ordinary thinking and the whole internal drama and the whole endless wandering, the greed and endless waiting for that future that never arrives, aversion endlessly waiting till whatever it is that we consider that is bothering us goes away, and then delusion, which delusion in the sense of falling into a case of mistaken identity, we spend years wandering around in a view of ourselves that is distorted and virtual and missing the being that we are in real time, that is not describable by all these stories that go through our mind. So when our ever-present awareness becomes focalized on the arising of one of those personality views that I'm not enough, or I'm so great, or I'm less than, or I'm equal to, the measuring mind, something in us says, this is suffering. Again, it becomes the cause of compassion, becomes the cause of letting go, and it becomes the cause of ultimately seeing through the illusion of that imagined separate being. And that, in fact, is what turns us toward that increasing sense that we don't exist alone, independent, apart from each other, in the way that our mind keeps recreating. It frees us to say, wow, this is a false sense of self. What is my self? Who am I in real time? Who am I on present evidence? I am not, as I sit here, I'm not so-and-so from so-and-so. I can't find that here. I'm simply awake. And that wakefulness doesn't have any limits. And I feel more sensitive that I'm not up, that I'm being in some way lived. I'm not just that one little cut-off, contracted being that I have imagined myself to be. I'm actually quite alone with everyone. This is a nice poem from Jennifer Wellwood that speaks to the transforming quality of presence, which is none other than saying the transforming quality of moment-to-moment mindful attention. It's called unconditional. Willing to experience aloneness, I discover connection everywhere. Turning to face my fear, I meet the warrior that lives within. Opening to my loss, I gain the embrace of the universe. Surrendering into emptiness, I find fullness without end. Each condition that I flee from pursues me. Each condition I welcome transforms me and becomes itself transformed into its radiant, jewel-like essence. I bow to the one who has made it so, who has crafted this master game. To play it is purest delight, to honor its form, true devotion. One missing, one thing that we often don't appreciate about the simple moments of mindfulness, simple moments of mindful attention, is that that simple moment of mindful attention is a moment without any view of ourselves, without any memory or association or virtual version of ourselves. And there's a wonderful sutra called the Avatamsaka Sutta. It's a Mahayana Buddhist sutra. It had a very pithy little line that said, having no view of self, one is always peaceful. So what is often overlooked is that simple moments of mindfulness, whether it is just a millimoment, it leaves in its wake, it plants a seed of peace. Because that moment is the opposite of greed, which creates tension, that spawns a lot of becoming. It's free of hatred, which spawns more anger and ill will and revenge fantasies, etc. Adds tension. There's no delusion, there's no confusion. So consequently, the simple moments of knowing what you're doing when you're doing it, walking and knowing you're walking, looking into somebody's eyes and know you're doing it, just being present, it having no view of self, one is always peaceful. And this peaceful presence inevitably brings affection. So that's, I think there's no magic about what creates a sangha of love. It's just people who are committed to simple presence and all the qualities that flow from that. Now I can speak about how all these qualities are inherent in the nature of mind. Love, compassion, joy, equanimity, discernment, intelligence, wisdom, everything flows from this. But because we are also so untrained, so conditioned to run from presence, to associate our well-being with what's next and with acquisition, with consumption, etc., with stuff, with getting to the weekend, getting to the vacation, whatever it is, because we're so conditioned, we need practices. We need to actually nurture those same qualities that, even though they're inherent in our nature, we need to remind ourselves of them. And this is why we have practices like the Brahma Viharas, where every day not only do you practice moment-to-moment mindful attention, but you do as I've been doing over many years, as I try to remind myself of those qualities by doing what I call stealth metta. I try to, in whatever way I can, under my breath, whenever I can remember, when I walk down the street, when I drive the car, I try to say, may you be happy, may you be happy, may you be happy. So at least my mind is inclining toward remembering those qualities instead of inclining as it's sometimes trained to do, to say, I hate you, get out of my way. And so it's something that we, even though the view from above is this grand expression of all the most noble qualities, as my friend Suryadas used to say, as humans we need to not only just have the view from above, we need to schlep up from below. So we need to practice. We need to practice every day. And not be, even if we have the deepest understanding, we can't rest on our memories. We have to have, our practice has to be alive, and we have to keep the current going. So what really supports ongoing practice is sangha. Sangha is a great support for ongoing practice, but sitting every day, as a great support. Walking every day, many quickies, short periods many times, very good support. And really taking it on and reminding yourself every day that as Padmasambhava put it, if you want to understand your past, look at your present experience. And if you want to understand your future, look at your present actions. So everything revolves around, you experience the fruits of all that you have practiced here and now, and you plant the seeds for your future present moments here and now. So what do you want to plant? What do you want to create? What do you want to choose? You want to choose greed, hatred, and delusion? Or do you want to choose love, compassion, wisdom, joy? It's totally within our power. And I've said this over and over, I say it any chance I get. For me, the only way that I've been able to keep that, at least what I consider the most wholesome choices alive for me, is to come here, to remind myself, and to, you know, sit with other people. So thank you for supporting my practice, and thank you again for the glorious celebration. My heart is just still so full. I think it may take me a lifetime to metabolize that experience, just too much. So maybe I should read the last little plug for Sangha, because I'm just Sangha crazy right now. Just once again, the lessons from geese. As each goose flaps its wings, it creates an uplift for the birds that follow. By flying in a V formation, the whole flock adds 72% greater flying range than if each bird flew alone. So people who share a common direction, sense of community, get where they're going quicker and easier because they are traveling on the thrust of one another. Fact two. When a goose falls out of formation, it suddenly feels the drag and resistance of flying alone. See, nobody can do this alone, this awakening process. It's too hard. Just too many forces saying, go shopping. Anyway, let me get back to this. When a goose falls out of formation, it suddenly feels the drag and resistance of flying alone. It quickly moves back into formation to take advantage of the lifting power of the bird immediately in front of it. So if we have as much sense as a goose, we stay in formation with those headed where we want to go. We're willing to accept their help and give our help to others. Fact three, when the lead goose tires, it rotates back into formation and another goose flies to the point position. So it pays to take turns doing the hard tasks and sharing leadership. That's a plug for other people to volunteer. As with geese, people are interdependent on each other's skills, capabilities, and unique arrangement of gifts, talents, and resources. Fact number four, the geese flying in formation honk to encourage those up front to keep up their speed. So we may need to make sure our honking is encouraging. In groups where there is encouragement, the production is much greater. The power of encouragement, stand by one's heart or core values, and encourage the heart and core of others is the quality of honking we seek. And finally, fact five. When a goose gets sick, wounded, or shot down, two geese drop out of formation and follow it down to help it and protect it. They stay with it until it dies or is able to fly again. Then they launch out with another formation or catch up with the flock. Lesson: if we had as much sense as geese, we will stand by each other in difficult times as well as when we are strong. So may all beings know the joys of Sangha, know the joy of mindful attention, and the release of the heart in love. So let's just sit quietly for a minute. from Rumi. We are the mirror as well as the face in it. We are pain and what cures pain. We are the sweet cold water as well as the jar that pours. We are tasting the taste of eternity in each moment. May our practice, our mirror-like nature, and any of the gifts, any of the goodness, any of the blessings, any of the benefits of our practice touch the hearts and minds of all who we touch, all our near and dear ones, and those afar, all those in happy circumstances and unhappy circumstances. May our practice be dedicated to the welfare and benefit of all beings so that all beings can know happiness and the causes of happiness increasing. That all beings can be free of suffering and the causes of suffering decreasing. That all beings can never be separated from the sacred happiness that is without sorrow here and now. And finally, I wish that all beings can grow in the immeasurable quality of serenity and equanimity, able to meet the worldly winds, the joys and the sorrows with less reactivity. And may our practice touch the hearts of all those rotten politicians whose hearts have not yet learned to love. May all beings be free. So, sorry. So thank you for your practice. Thanks for your generosity. And thanks again for the party. That was a highlight of my life. Thank you.
Any title? You want me to derive one after editing and listening? Yeah.